Hello, what have we here?
Welcome to Resistance Radio, Hype Bull's newest Star Wars podcast. I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Eric.
All right. Wow, guys. First Star Wars podcast.
Here it is.
First transmission.
Should we begin with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away? Or I got it. Let's begin on a somber note with a moment of silence for all of the people in the New Republic that were lost and all of the people in the Hosnian system who were killed by Starkiller Base.
I'm just thrilled that Mikey in particular finally has a podcast to talk about Star Wars on. Because he's been bugging the people of MuggleCast and Hypewool Podcast for a long time now about a Star Wars podcast. And now's a great time to start one.
Yeah, you know, I figured with all the new Star Wars stuff, I might as well just have someone else to talk to about Star Wars. Because, you know, I've been a fan for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and get started real quick. I'm going to go ahead and ask Danya, you want to give a little introduction about yourself and a history of your fandom love?
Oh, wow. What, just for Star Wars particularly?
Because, just for Star Wars. Well, yeah, just for Star Wars. You know, just so people know.
Because otherwise we'll be here for a long
time. Yeah, just, you know, just so we know different perspectives, you know, how much you love Star Wars. Because I know your love is similar to mine.
Yeah, so probably got started around 4 years old, give or take. My dad was really, really into Star Wars, and he got me into it. And we sat down and watched it together. And it was kind of one of those funny things that they never thought that I would be, like, my parents never thought that I would be really into it. They always thought, after my brother came along and then they showed the film to him, that it would be him getting really obsessed with it. And no, it didn't turn out like that. He really doesn't care. And I was obsessed. I got all of, like, the Expanded Universe books, toys. I had a lightsaber that I took everywhere with me, and absolutely loved it. So I've still got boxes and boxes of, like, the old Expanded Universe books and comic books and loads of old Star Wars toys that I couldn't take with me when I moved from Wales because I didn't have enough room to store it. So I'm back at my parents' place the end of this month, and I'm probably going to be going through some of those and bringing back my favorite books and favorite toys. So I've been a Star Wars fan for a really, really long time.
You are a person right from my own heart. I totally agree with you. I've been doing this Star Wars fan thing forever. A little about me. I've been a Star Wars fan since I was probably about 3, so really young also. My mom and dad were both Star Wars fans. My mom actually saw it opening night at the Grauman's in 1977 in L.A.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it was one of those movies she's like, oh, yeah, you know, we should introduce our kids to this. But you got to understand, like, I had a very active imagination as a little kid. I had an imaginary friend, Luke Skywalker. He's the one who actually broke the television. It wasn't me. Even to this day, I refuse to admit that it was me. My mom still tells everyone that story that, no, it wasn't him. It was apparently Luke Skywalker who broke the television. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like you, my room at home, Andrew can probably attest to this, at my parents' house.
I love that you're bringing this up because I was going to mention this once you were finished.
You know, I will probably get my mom to send pictures. I probably have pictures on my phone, and I'll post them so people can see. But literally, my room is a shrine to Star Wars in a lot of ways. My mom actually takes, like, nephews and family members and friends up to my room just to show them, like, how much I love Star Wars. And I'm not even there anymore. So I'm a big Star Wars fan from a long time. EU, all the books. I have an entire shelf, like 3 bookshelves full of all the books. I actually have a set of the books here when I moved from California to Kentucky. So, yeah, I'm a big Star Wars fan. And what about you, Andrew?
I this is why I'm not going to be a regular on this podcast. I am a pretty new Star Wars fan, actually. I had never seen the movies.
Yeah,
up until a few months ago. It wasn't a part of my life. I growing up, for whatever reason, I guess it's my parents' fault. And
Also didn't see the Lord of the Rings films either. We had to force you to watch those.
Yeah, it took me a while to see those as well. So I finally saw the Star Wars movies, of course. Thanks God. Thank God. And I of course, loved them. And I love how Disney and Lucasfilm are breathing new life into the series, starting with The Force Awakens.
And Eric, I know right around episode 7, you started to text message me. We hadn't talked in a while. And it was like, hey, Mikey, what are your thoughts on Star Wars episode 7 coming out? I'm like, of course I have thoughts.
No, like, I can remember playing with Star Wars action figures when I was maybe about 5 or 6. I had like this box, I guess, of just like generic like action figures, toy cars, all sorts of stuff that like I think my parents used to collect at like garage sales, and then they put them in this box and I would get them like for good behavior and stuff. But I had like all these old, like probably classic, probably like priceless now, but they were obviously old, ragged, beat to hell. Like they had clearly been played with before I got them. But it was like old Obi-Wan, probably even like a Mon Mothma figurine of some sort. And I just remember playing with them when I was really young and not really knowing who they were or what they were. So I probably had a lot of like non-Star Wars related outings with them in my imagination. But I saw the Star Wars movies when I was young. And the first like real memory I can have of like being a fan was before the special editions came out in 97, or between then and episode 1 and 99. There was this mail-in fan club where you became a member and they sent like this suitcase. I think it was through Scholastic's those book by mail programs that they had in school, libraries and stuff. Mm. And like they sent a suitcase or like a plastic suitcase that's shaped like Darth Vader's helmet. And you open it up and there's like collectible trading cards. And then there was like a monthly magazine for like with updates, with like filming updates for the prequels, and in that, whatever that was called. Anyway, I was a member of that, and I remember going to see the special editions in theaters, and then the prequels I sat through when they were all in theaters. So yeah, it's kind of been a fan throughout the years. I wouldn't say it's my primary fandom. I never got into the extended universe, although I'd like to. Honestly, the most recent, like before Force Awakens came out, my big obsession was Knights of the Old Republic. I got that on like, there was this Best of Star Wars PC compilation thing, and I bought it a couple years ago. And I, for the first time, although it was years late, played Knights of the Old Republic, and I just loved it. Absolutely.
You know, Revan from Knights of the Old Republic, yeah, he almost made it into Clone Wars. The series.
Really?
Yeah. Almost made it into Clone Wars. There's an interview with Dave Filoni about it. Made me really sad that they cut him out.
I would have loved to have known how he survived that long. You know, because it's like, isn't it like 5,000 years before?
Yeah, it's a long time before the Old Republic. It's like, I'm going to probably get blasted for not knowing off the top of my head, but it's a couple thousand years before. Like 3,000 is the actual number, but... Yeah. All right. Well, moving on, I just want to go over some basic news real quick before we get started into our spotlight topic tonight. Date change for episode 8. I know it happened a couple of weeks ago, but what do you guys think about that? It got pushed back to December 2017. I was looking forward to May myself, but...
Yeah. I remember after seeing The Force Awakens getting out and like, you're telling me the next one is coming out in May 2017? That would have been less than 2 years, which was exciting, but... It seemed a little too good to be true, I think, and turns out it was. But it makes sense for a couple of reasons. First of all, Disney obviously found a lot of success in putting Episode 7 in December. Remember, that one was supposed to come out in summer 2015.
Yeah, it was supposed to be May also, because yes, the original Star Wars came out in May. And that's when they released the special edition and all those fun things, too.
So it's been like a thing for Star Wars movies to come out over the summer.
I mean,
so
haven't all of them?
Disappointed. Like, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why the fans were always so excited about it. Or were disappointed that Episode 7 was pushed to December. So anyway, I think, and, you know, the Rogue One, that's going to be coming out December of this year. So I think Disney has just decided that this is going to be their place for the Star Wars movies.
I'm okay with that. You know, every Christmas I'm going to get a new Star Wars film.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, it's like Merry Christmas to me. You know, I get a Star Wars film. What are your thoughts, Danya, about being pushed back? Happy, sad?
Initially, when there wasn't a lot of information about why it was getting pushed back, I was like, oh, that's a little worrying. And then when rumors started like going around that it was mostly for like some more script rewrites and to potentially change around like how much certain characters were being involved over others, I was like, okay, I can live with that. Because there were some articles going around that people didn't, well, the people behind the films didn't expect, or in the marketing that side, didn't expect people to connect as much as they did with Rey, Finn, and Poe. They expected them to connect more with Kylo Ren. And I'm like, they're going, really?
Yeah, it's
you didn't,
it's got a cool outfit.
Them, yeah, it's like you didn't expect them to connect with your new trio of characters, like your lead characters.
It's really weird when you read anything having to do with the marketing of Star Wars, like the new Star Wars.
Well, but you got to remember, though, like the big character from the original trilogy is Darth Vader, you know, and if you look at like A New Hope, he's in it for like 4 minutes. he's in it for like 4 minutes, and it's like, ooh, Darth Vader, and he just was so iconic. So, you know, this is the new Darth Vader, and so everyone assumed it was going to be the big bad, you know? All right.
It's fine. I think spacing each movie out by one full year is good.
There's other things to tide us over in the meantime.
Yeah, clearly they needed to do this, and also like with the film being the highest grossing film of all time, international, domestic, everything, I don't think they think that there's anything wrong with December.
No, I think the December is absolutely fine, you know, release date for it. Also in Episode 8 news, Gwendolyn Christie confirmed Captain Phasma's back. She survived the garbage chute.
Hallelujah! Well, hopefully we'll see more of her in Episode 8. That was one of the things I was so disappointed about, is that in the trailers she looked so badass, and then she was barely in it at all. I was like... This is like a Boba Fett kind of thing.
It's exactly like Boba Fett. It's like really cool armor, very little to do with the story.
Yeah, which was a shame, because the setup between her and Finn was so interesting, with her being his direct commanding officer. And you see it a lot in the Before the Awakening book as well, if anyone's read that, is that they have a very close relationship. In fact, Captain Phasma was pretty much grooming Finn for some sort of leadership within the Stormtrooper program.
Interesting.
And I kind of want to see that play out more, because it would be such a fascinating character arc for them both to go like parallel against each other. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they'll utilize her a little bit more.
Yeah, hopefully they'll explore more with that book. You know, Before the Awakening was, like I said, I think we were talking earlier, Finn's section in Before the Awakening was my favorite. Just learning about him and his Stormtrooper squad and his relationship with Phasma. So it was really good. So I definitely encourage everyone to take a look at it.
It would have been so depressing if Captain Phasma had like met her end in the garbage, like trying to get out of the garbage chute while the Starkiller base exploded. That would have just been really, really sad and depressing. Although I kind of wish they'd done that, because it would be bold. It would be like really, 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 really bold. But yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know, just to kind of talk, since we're talking about Phasma and Finn a little bit, in that book you also meet FN-299, which is what StarWars.com actually said, what was everyone kind of called the Stormtrooper called TR-8R, traitor, who called Finn traitor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. FN-2199, or Nines, what she was called in the book, was one of those things where like he actually was really, really close to Finn while they were training. Mm-hmm. So it really adds a whole lot of more backstory to that whole calling him a traitor.
That's cool.
Yeah. You also meet part of his sort of like little squadron, FN-2003, who's called Slip. Now, Slip is the Stormtrooper that dies and smears the blood on Finn's helmet, and they were really, really close as well. In fact, a lot of what Finn was getting pulled up on in the Before the Awakening book is because he kept going back to protect Slip and to make sure that he survived and got through all of the training modules and stuff. So the fact that he died out on like their first big mission is kind of a huge deal, because they were pretty close in the Before the Awakening book as well.
Which was the whole catalyst to the beginning of The Force Awakens. All right. Yeah. Also, another news that just kind of came up was the Force Awakens Lego game is coming out.
Yes.
It's coming out in June, June 28th. I'm a huge fan of the Lego games. Like, all the old Star Wars ones, the Harry Potter ones. I just like the humor that the Lego characters have, but I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Yeah, and the humor is very present in the introduction trailer that they launched.
Yeah.
It's funny. Watch it.
Watch it. My favorite part is fishing on Takodana, and then all of a sudden.
That poor man.
I know.
It was almost too much. Like, basically, they took every scene from the real trailer and revamped it so it has some funny goof at the end. I don't know. It was something. But yeah, it looks really good.
It fits with the Lego. It fits with the whole Lego thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like every single scene had something, and it made me. I was laughing out loud, so it was nice.
There was an interview released with two of the writers for the game who were talking about how difficult it was to adapt, because like Force Awakens, perhaps more than other Star Wars films, gets kind of serious, like particularly during Kylo Ren and like Rey's fight and their struggle. And it was actually really interesting but very short interview with them where they said, oh yeah, that was tough, but it's still gonna be a gag.
It fits. All right, so that's kind of all the episode 7/8 news that I had written down, but obviously we'll kind of keep looking at that. Rogue One, a Star Wars story, we kind of briefly mentioned that it's coming out this December. We don't have a trailer for it yet.
Yeah, they're keeping that under wraps. I don't know why, but...
Well, Star Wars Celebration happens in July, so...
But I think that's too late for the first trailer.
The first teaser? Really? July?
We
got to remember, the first trailer for Force Awakens was over a year before it was released.
I would say Batman v Superman in March. You get, like, a teaser.
I keep forgetting who owns it's Disney, right? Like, still, because Disney owns Marvel now, so it'd be,
well, wait. Batman vs Superman is DC, yeah, DC. And that's Warner Brothers.
So
that's,
I'm trying to think of like the studio, when the studios align.
Okay, well, how about Captain America?
I'm thinking, yeah, Captain America.
When is that coming out though?
But why would they put, like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, when Phantom Menace came out,
thanks,
they put that on a film that, again, this was not Disney though, but they put it on a film that people went to go see the film for the trailer,
right,
when Phantom Menace was coming out.
Yeah. I hope it wasn't like The Lake House or something.
I don't remember what it was. I almost feel like it was another Mark Hamill thing. I think it was Wing Commander, but Mark Hamill wasn't in it. I don't remember. I'll have to look it up. But I don't know. I definitely would hope to see it sooner rather than later, but it could be on one of those films.
It's already less than a year, so...
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited for Rogue One, though. In general, like, knowing just the basic plot premise that has been released about Rogue One, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, but then...
It'll be really interesting to see the box office for that one, because obviously everybody and their mother went to The Force Awakens, and will that type of turnout show up for Rogue One? I really don't think so. At all.
I think with Rogue One, they're going to have to, especially with the trailer, I think they have to do it well, because they have to explain to, like, even the casual people who saw, you know, The Force Awakens, that this is not the next story, you know, this is not the next Star Wars film.
Chronologically,
it's not the next chronological one. It's not Episode 8. This is a Star Wars story. So they almost have to draw parallels to, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, this is in that same thing, but it's different.
Right.
But
there's probably a lot of pressure, too, because this is going to be, I mean, on everybody involved, because this is going to set the tone for other standalone Star Wars films in the future. Like, this is the first one of many.
Oh, yeah. And at the same time, you know, I'm wondering if we can see someone in this film, Rogue One, that will be, you know, will be introduced in Episode 8 or was introduced in Episode 7 and we didn't even know that he was, you know, he or she was part of, you know, this thing from before, you know, the first Death Star plans.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it'd be tough because they'd have to age them the same. Like, they'd have to be 40 or 50 now and 17 or 20, like, back in Rogue One. You know what I'm saying? Like, because of the time difference between when the Rebels stole the plans for the first Death Star and now.
Yeah. So, you know, who knows what they'll do there, but...
I mean, you don't even have to necessarily have it be a character that will show up in Episode 8 or Episode 9. You can still connect the characters from Rogue One to Star Wars in a different way. Like, for example, Poe's mother, Shara Bey, was a huge part of the Rebellion. If you read the Shattered Empire comics, she was a pilot around that time. So around the same time and going up to the Battle of Endor as well. So, you know, you can draw, if they do, they could put someone like Shara Bey in there. And because Poe was born just before the Battle of Endor, you know, you can start drawing parallels to it from Rogue One to the main continuity that way. I mean, there's loads of ways that they could do it.
Well, and that's what I'm hoping for, is something like, because I knew of Poe's connection to the original trilogy films, you know, could they have something in here that is tied to the new films? You know, someone's kid, even. Or maybe someone is now a general that was in passing. You know, you just never know. True.
I do hope, though. I mean, we're still thinking of, like, the same Death Star plans, right? Like, isn't that the line, many Bothans died to bring us?
Well, that's the second one. That's the second set.
Oh, okay, damn it. Because I was just hoping that, like, everyone in Rogue One was a Bothan.
The second one was.
Many of them get annihilated.
Yeah, it was the second Death Star was the many Bothans
died.
Thank
you for the question.
The first one was basically the plans were in Prince Leia's hands, you know, and they got into R2-D2, which met Luke, and, you know, it started, those plans made their way all the way to, you know, the beginning of A New Hope.
Tatooine and
the tentative four. So it's one of those things, like, who knows how they got into Princess Leia's hand. So we're going to see a young Princess Leia in the film.
Oh, really?
Well, we should, because they got to, you know, that's how they get the plans to the Rebel Alliance, is through her originally. Right? I don't know.
I can just see them being delivered to, like, the blockade runner and then
cut it away
to, like, C-3PO and be like, you know, in a cameo where he has one line and it's like, you droid, take these to the princess. Oh, I'd be, sir. No, fine, sir. You know, it would be weird to, like, it'd be weird to cast someone as young Princess Leia who's not... It wasn't Carrie Fisher's daughter in Force Awakens as the... Uh-huh. Yeah, I wonder.
I mean, you don't necessarily have to see her face. You could... I mean, her look...
Yeah,
the
hairdo.
The Star Wars movie is so iconic. You know, the white dress, the buns, everything. You don't even need to, like, pan up to her face or anything. You could even frame it from... behind.
I would almost prefer they didn't do that, though. Like, that's I would prefer that they do something like in the new Tron movie, which I can't believe I'm bringing up, but like Jeff Bridges, you know, to look like he was still 30 years. I mean,
well, they
still
also Disney also de-aged Michael Douglas in Ant-Man to make him look young.
Oh, really?
In the flashback scenes.
Did it work? Because
it totally looked real. I was like, okay. It made me think about it. Well, think about even like Captain America when they did that too, before he was Captain America, you know, the scrawny body and everything. Like, they've done a really good job with some of that stuff.
That tech is getting better, like those effects. So I would almost hope they actually get Carrie Fisher to be in it or something. I don't know. Maybe her daughter, something like
that.
We'll
see. Who knows? All right. So definitely Rogue One, excited for it. We'll kind of keep up to date with the news as it comes through. And then also the Star Wars theme park. You know, we don't have much news about that other than they've broken the ground for it recently. Andrew, I know you live in California. Me and you used to go to Disneyland quite often. What are your feelings about them closing down, at least at Disneyland, Big Thunder Ranch?
I am not thrilled by it, to be honest with you.
Really? Like, yeah. I'm beyond thrilled about it. I don't live in California anymore, but, like, I never went to Big Thunder Ranch.
I will be thrilled. I'll be happy about it once it opens, I guess. It's going to be really busy for the first couple of years after it opens, so that sucks. But what sucks right now is that Disneyland has closed the train, the big boat, the Fantasmic nighttime show, and a couple other things for a year so they can work on Star Wars land. And construction is already underway. So these classic, iconic aspects of Star Wars or of Disneyland have been shut down. And that really bums me out. I mean, the train.
But Fantasmic had been closed down for over a year before for different things like that.
But this is multiple things. And then they have the nerve to raise prices a few weeks ago. Like, no thanks. I actually canceled my pass because I'm going to Wizarding World of Harry Potter, which is closer to me and a hell of a lot cheaper. So anyway, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine when it opens, but right now I'm not that thrilled about it.
You know, I'll tell you this. So I went – I went and I looked through it all. Unfortunately, I got to Disneyland 2 days after they had just closed, right after they broke the ground for it. So I was excited that they broke the ground for it, and I was a little bummed. I agree with you that, you know, the train, Main Street, you know, the train is closed. Rivers of America, you know, it's a bummer that the train is, you know, the boat is not going anymore. But in all honesty, what they're taking out and what's going to go there instead, I'm just so excited for. It's not even funny. Yeah. Although I am wondering, are they going to move Star Tours from Tomorrowland over to this?
Nah, I bet it'll stay because they better have two new rides. And obviously the space is limited, so they'll need to. I think they need to keep Star Tours where it is.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone else have thoughts on it? Excited? Not excited?
I've actually started planning to travel out to do a big trip to Disney for my 30th birthday, specifically because there's now going to be a Star Wars land, a Star Wars expansion. So
yeah.
That's not until 2018 though, so I've got time to save up and
get excited. Leave room for it. Oh, and that reminds me, it's also really annoying to me that this is the first land in Disneyland that is for one particular IP or fandom. I mean,
Carsland.
The rest of Disneyland is, no, in Disneyland, though. So Frontierland, Tomorrowland, you know, all these others. California Adventure, yeah, they have Bugs Land and all that. But Disneyland, the original theme park, is getting a land just for Star Wars. Blah!
Now is it like the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Islands of Adventure where it's in the back of the park so you have to walk through all the other lands?
Yeah, it's in the very back. But here's the thing is though, it's in the very back of the park. You're going to go through Main Street, which is awesome, and probably the fastest way to get there is going to be through Frontierland. So you're going to pass Big Thunder, you know, and you got to ride Big Thunder, you know, the railroad. So it's going to be a fun ride on your way to the Star Wars land.
Yeah, you'll have no other choice because there's going to be a 3-hour wait just to get into Star Wars land. You'll have to ride
you guys. Although I will tell you, it's probably going to be like that because I remember when Disneyland introduced Mickey's Toontown, it was a long wait to even get into the area that it was at.
Yeah, and Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Orlando, there was a wait to get
there
in.
There were lines around Islands of Adventure just to get into Hogsmeade.
Yeah, for the grand opening. And here at Universal Hollywood, which is about to open in Wizarding World Hollywood, they're setting up kiosks outside of the Wizarding World to get like return time to come back. So, yeah, Anyway, I'm sure Disney will do a good job with Star Wars Land. It's just going to be a long road to get there.
Alrighty. A few more things before we get to our spotlight topic. Recently, we just had another Star Wars book released, Star Wars Bloodline by Claudia Gray. Did anyone read her previous book? Danya, I'm looking at you. Lost Stars.
Yes, I did. I'm really excited for this one because she has Claudia Gray has an amazing writing style. It's really instantly kind of captivating. Like she knows how to build tension. And Leia was in Lost Stars very, very, very briefly. And I'm really excited to see what Claudia does with her because the very brief little bit that we got in Lost Stars was great. And the cover for this book is amazing.
It looks amazing, doesn't it? I want a full size poster for the cover of the book.
Yeah, because it's kind of like 1940s war kind of propaganda style, and I love it because obviously she's always been a very strong military kind of icon, first in the rebellion and then in the resistance. So. Yeah, I really, really love this kind of style for it. And anything that kind of is going to dive a lot further into Leia's character and looking at her outside of, I guess, the princess kind of tagline that she always gets in all the merchandising, because she's so much more than that. She's, you know, she's princess, she's senator, she's general. So she's always kind of led troops at all times. So this is going to be really, really, really cool to see. So
I'm like 3 years late to this revelation, but she is now a Disney princess, isn't she?
Yep.
Yes.
Man.
There's a really adorable little comic series called Pocket Princesses that someone does online, and she added Leia into that series as well, which was the greatest thing.
I absolutely hanging around with Jasmine in the foyer somewhere. Yeah. Mm.
Just all of them. Yes, so technically Leia is now a Disney princess. So
oh man, but Bloodline, getting back to that, looks really good. I agree, like anything that shows more of Leia's character, and these books now that are being released are authorized official, like basically canon, right?
Yeah, so for those who are just listening and are not huge Star Wars fans, but just kind of coming in from Force Awakens, basically when Disney took over, Star Wars and Lucasfilm had this huge, huge, huge extended universe, the EU. And the Lucasfilm story group actually said, no, that's actually real. But then when Disney wanted to do episodes 7, 8, and 9, because so much had been written post Return of the Jedi, that they just couldn't actually weave in a new story. And people are like, oh, they should just do this book series as a film. But you buy this property, you don't want to do someone else's work. You want to create your own, which I totally get. So they basically went through and the Lucasfilm story group went through and cherry picked a couple books that they liked enough, and they reincorporated into the actual canon, and the rest of it has become legends, which is really cool. Cause you have to think about, like they said, it's not wrong or anything. It just says these characters are so powerful, or they're so strong, that they've become legend throughout the galaxy. It's kind of like even Rey, you know, Luke Skywalker's real, like they've become legend, but you know what I mean? So these are stories that have been embellished or something. So
legends are the ones that are no longer
longer part of the canon. But they're still good reads. Some of them are actually phenomenal reads, but they're still good reads. And it's one of those things where you can take it where it may actually be mentioned in passing, and they might even just throw something like, "Oh no, that's just a legend. That was a myth, or that's someone's tall tale about Luke." Yeah, so they redid that, and this book is one of the few books that are newer that are part of canon.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, there was a whole series of books called Journey to the Force Awakens, and they're all canon as well. So yeah,
there was a good Leia book in there, too. Unfortunately, I'm forgetting the name of that book, but it was really, really well done.
Yeah, there was a lot. There were a lot of books that came out prior to The Force Awakens.
Yeah, there was one about the three original characters, you know, Han, Luke, and Leia. There was Lost Stars. There was Before the Awakening, and there was a bunch of short story ones. I've read most of them so far. I'm still working through a couple right now, but
I need to get a list and start reading.
Wikipedia's got a good list. I'll link it later. I'll link it later for you guys.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
All right, moving on. So this is something you wanted to talk about, Eric. We started talking about Battlefront. And they just released some news about some expansion stuff, right?
Yeah, this is great. I am all over Battlefront, you guys. Do you guys have it? Have you played it? Andrew, have you seen it played?
I've seen stuff about it, but I haven't played it, so
it's pretty cool. I have it for my PC. Of course I bought the Ultimate Edition, so I have the season pass, so I have all the X packs as they come out, so I'm excited.
Nice. I haven't gotten the season pass yet, but I will. Especially because now we finally have details as to what exactly is coming and when. So just a quick run through. This was announced. So the game is cool. The game is actually great. They have multiple game modes. It's mostly online. There is not an offline single player campaign, which I was concerned about before getting the game, but actually now that I got the game, it's pretty cool. Even just for the online stuff, there are missions and stuff that help train you to get good at playing online, because ultimately, as with every other game, the people online are like 20 levels above you at all times. So there is a bit of a learning curve, and you can just get your ass handed to you in pieces and blasted charred pieces if you don't practice. But the added bits that they're going, so they have a lot of missions on Tatooine, Endor, and Hoth in the existing game, but they're adding Jabba's palace and also more of Sullust, which Sullust appears in one of the books, I think, one of the major, like, still active canon books. The character, I think, who's always with Lando, the guy with the cheeks and the big eyes. He's Sullustan. So he's from that planet. Anyway, Sullust is actually huge in Battlefront already. It's actually, like, so for the Walker Assault mode online, it's all on Sullust. But they basically are adding that and Jabba's Palace in the first expansion, which is coming out next month. But then in summer are adding Bespin, which is just going to be the most amazing thing in the entire world, being on Cloud City. I bet and I hope this is going to be a big change for the game, because I don't think there's anywhere currently where you could just, like, fall to your death. So that'll be fun. That's what I'm looking forward to. I want to fall to my death. It's just one more way to get my butt kicked in.
See, my problem with all the new maps and everything, like, I'm super excited for them, but I don't know if you remember when Jakku was released. One, the game is super detailed. DICE did a phenomenal job. And speaking of Sullust, they have a great interview with the guys talking about how Lucasfilm and them just gave them kind of full reign to create Sullust, which is awesome because we had never seen it and it was never described. But we've always known about Sullust. Mm. But one of the problems with, like, when Jakku was released, like, there's Star Destroyers, like, in battle above you. Like, you're not in the air, but they're above you. And you see the Star Destroyer just literally falling to the ground. Like, I'm positive it's the one we see in The Force Awakens. And, you know, it's bad because obviously there's objectives and you're supposed to be doing things. But I would literally just turn around and watch the Star Destroyer fall to the ground. I'm like, I probably died 4 or 5 times just watching the Star Destroyer die. I'm like, same thing's going to happen with, like, Bespin and Jabba's Palace. I'm going to be like, I don't even care about playing. I just want to see this stuff.
In the background.
It's like, what's all this stuff? You know, so they did a phenomenal job. The game looks beautiful. I have it for PC. I know you have it for PS4, Eric.
PS4. You can play in when you're flying X-Wings and stuff. There is a Jakku map in that mode as well, which is fun. But I agree, it's not necessarily like you can play, like, every version of, like, the same time period. So, like, when you're playing I think it's Turning Point on Jakku, you can become a TIE fighter, I think, if you, like, find the power up, but, like, you're not involved in the intergalactic war. You basically can just become an AT-ST and start killing people on the ground.
Yeah, I think that one you can become a snow speeder for
in Hoth.
No, on Jakku for the Rebels.
Then
you become a walker, you know, an AT-ST for imps.
Okay. Yeah. So just wrapping up this news here, though, in fall, they're releasing the Death Star. In fall 2016. So I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I may have to go into the trench run 1 or 2 times.
1 or 200 times.
1 or 2. Yeah, I'm just pretending like
Switch off your targeting times. Computer. They better have, like, special. Like, I don't know. It's just the detail, as you said, Mikey, is why it's so fun to exist in this world. Of course, you have John Williams' music playing or any number of other beats and riffs that are familiar throughout the I guess everything is John Williams, so there's that. But it's very immersive, and it's honestly a lot of fun. I'm actually surprised how much original trilogy Star Wars Battlefront is. I know that it's, like, got history because there have been several Battlefront games before, but, like, Jakku is one of the first where it's like, oh, you're set a little bit into the future, you know, after this massive war has happened. But everything else is original trilogy, and it seems like for now that's what they're sticking with. You'll be able to play as, like, Lando, I think, once Bespin comes out.
All right. Well, moving on to our spotlight topic today. It's going to be Rey from The Force Awakens.
Who?
Rey.
Who's that? I don't think I have an action figure for Rey.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I do.
You do?
Got my Funko. Got my Rey Funko.
Oh, I do have the Funko. I actually have 2 Funkos.
One of few Rey toys
that you can actually get. So Rey is obviously in The Force Awakens, not the original or prequel trilogy. And I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot more of her in episode 8 and 9. But yeah, so Rey starts on a planet that's called Tatooine. No, called Jakku.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's another desert planet, but it's called Jakku. And Donnie, I know we and you talked a little bit earlier about before the Awakening book series with her life on Jakku. What are you guys' thoughts on her being left alone on this planet?
I feel bad for her. I think, though, she's certainly made the best of it. Like, she is just such a badass character who is self-sufficient and, like, working for scraps. You know, when we meet her in the movie, like, she's the perfect, I think, catalyst for this entire new generation of viewers. And she's got a lot of heart. She's got a lot of spunk. I think she's, like, perfectly, like, the epitome of what a hero should be in this day and age.
She also doesn't seem to have much respect there. When she was trying to sell her parts, her scraps, it didn't seem like she was getting the respect that she deserved.
Unkar Plutt guy, there has to be more left with her relationship. Like, I haven't read the books yet, the extended books, but I have to say that, like, there's clearly so much more there between Unkar Plutt and her. He's kind of like a Dursley character, if I can bring Harry Potter into this.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it definitely, like, she was left in his care. So...
Right, and the movie that's not exactly clear by the movie. But, like, because if he cares for her, he shouldn't be, like, giving her the worst of the worst scraps, like, the smallest amount of stuff if she's in his care. But I guess he's not... He's totally Verna Dursley. He's not playing favorites.
Well, I will say, like you said, she made the best of her life on this desert planet. She lives in an AT-AT Dawnwalker, which is just, I think, really cool.
Amazing.
Yeah, kind of her own little hideaway, if you will.
That was a fun surprise when the camera zoomed out and you saw what she was sitting in front of.
Yeah, that was excellent. I love the little details inside of it as well, like the little kind of straw X-Wing pilot doll that she had, and the old X-Wing kind of helmet and everything. I just, when you looked around, there were just some really nice details from within there, and you kind of have to wonder, like, where she got that from, and whether that's a clue as to who she is, the little X-Wing doll. Did that come with her from she came from? Or
because so much of her past is a mystery, and there's so many companion books to Force Awakens now. In the visual dictionary, which is actually, that's worth your money, however much it's huge. It's a huge copy.
And there's some great information from there.
There's amazing information. Like, they went all out of, like, basically spoiling or answering things that maybe the movies never will. But that doll apparently came from another downed. It was part of the Yellow Battalion, I want to say. They answer where it came from, the doll. But it's like, it almost takes away from, like, the experience, because you do want to think that either she made it or, like, it was the last remnant of, like, her
parents.
Well,
the doll she made, if I remember correctly, I don't have the visual dictionary.
Oh, you know what? I'm wrong.
But the blast shield is from Yellow Squadron.
You're right.
And actually, if you read on it, it's, I'm almost wondering if she named herself, because the name on that helmet is Rey, translates to Rey, R-H-E-Y.
Really?
Yeah. So it and it actually even says that in the visual dictionary. And the doll is left over from, you know, pieces of a flight suit. So she made that herself.
Okay, she did make the doll.
So she did make the doll herself, but that helmet was also scavenged on Jakku. She found it in a downed Y-wing.
Some people think, and this is part of the theory of her being, like, her origins, of her being, like, Luke's daughter. Like, they think it's, like, the same blast shield that he used in A New Hope, like, from the Falcon. Which, to be honest, I mean, she didn't grow up far from the Falcon. So it could potentially be that same blast shield. But, you know, I think the visual dictionary had a different explanation for where it came from.
Yep. All right. What about the relationship between Rey and Finn, guys? The first time we meet them.
Stop holding my hand.
I love that.
Yeah. It was funny. It kept the scene kind of light while there was a lot of panic going on. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I like that it actually turned out that he kept grabbing her hand and move her, and then eventually, when he fell down after that blast, she ended up grabbing his hand, you know, kind of, even though she didn't want, it's like, stop grabbing my hand. And in like the look in, you know, Finn's face or John Boyega's face was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Pick me up. Like it was really just a kind of a turn. I felt like it was kind of them coming full circle, actually trusting each other at that point.
Yeah.
I've seen a really adorable comic. I see loads of these little people who've drawn like comics, reaction comics from like the film. There's a really, really funny one where Rey is like, stop holding my hand. And Finn is like, she's like, I don't need you to hold my hand. I'm fine. And he's like, well, I'm not. And it's great. I love that little comic because, yeah, it's just super cute, super funny. And, obviously, Finn's, like, going through a massive upheaval at that point, so it kind of makes a lot of sense if you think about it that way, but I just really like how they play off each other as characters. I like how, you know, Rey as a character is, at points, a lot more sure of herself. Like, she's aware of her limitations and her skills. Yeah, she's vulnerable in other ways, but, you know, Finn, in his own ways, completely lost in this film. And I just really like how they interact with each other, how they kind of pick each other back up and encourage each other, and just their chemistry as well through the film I really enjoyed. They have a really great on-screen relationship, and whatever that means going forward, whether it's just continued friendship or not, I thought they were really sweet. It was really endearing. And I'd love to see them interact a lot more, obviously, if depending on where they are when episode 8 comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really fun to see Finn, Rey, and Poe and how their relationships are going to evolve over the next couple of movies, especially now since apparently they're writing them more into the movie.
Yeah, if they're the new trio. Which I think,
and they are.
I don't see any reason to doubt that. But like, between Rey and Finn, she has a lot of heart, and she seems to have forgiven him based on their final goodbye before she goes off at the end of Force Awakens, like, for basically betraying her and kind of going his own way. I know he was lost, and he thought that he had to just get away from the First Order at Maz's castle. But I think that seems to have been resolved, and I think ultimately she understands him and he understands her, and it's a good strong bond between them.
He needed to leave. He needed to have his full character. It's like, I need to get away. And I think him coming back, like, the first thing, as soon as he sees her being taken, his first concern is trying to save her. Like,
right,
he didn't even care about Starkiller Base other than like, I need to get there to save her, and I'll turn down the shield, but it's like, and I'll turn off the shield, but I need to get there to save Rey. Even though she didn't kind of need saving. She was,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
Self-rescuing.
Well, she was kind of self-rescuing. But yeah, even their goodbye, like, Rey was like super sad to go, and Finn was non-responsive because of that lightsaber hurt. Anyway, moving on from Rey to Finn. What about Rey's relationship with Han?
That was fun. She, I think, is probably somehow a better pilot than he is, and I don't understand, but at least for comic relief, at least for the part of, you know, he's sort of a would-be mentor for her. I like, somebody at some point had said that, like, Han has sort of the Obi-Wan role in this movie, because he is the one who sort of confirms the legends of the Jedi, this, that, the other thing. But, like, ultimately he does mentor Rey, and even though she gets off of Jakku, but, like, he makes it okay and gives her a purpose for, like, not going back.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but when Han offered her the co-pilot position, that's when I knew that Han was going to die, because it's a passing of the torch, which I think is established by the end of the movie as well. You know, now that he has unfortunately died, it's time for somebody to step into his shoes, and it definitely seems like Rey is going to be the person to do that.
I can see that. You know, Rey and Han have this interesting kind of dynamic, because, like, even when they first meet Han, Finn says, you are the Jedi, you are the general from the rebellion. Like, that's how Finn sees him, coming from the First Order. Whereas Ray sees him as the smuggler, the pilot who, you know, did the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs, which he has to correct her. So, you know, it's one of those things where he definitely sees it. And the really cool part that when she meets Han, and what I saw before is before we saw the films, you know, the entire time you see the Millennium Falcon doing all these amazing things, it's actually Rey flying, not Han, which you didn't know until you saw the movie. So
that's true.
You know, so her flying skills and her being able to kind of talk to the Falcon the same way that Han always has. You know, if you look back at the original trilogy, especially on Empire Strikes Back, when Han and Chewie are trying to get the Falcon ready to leave Echo Base, you know, they're literally pulling wires and moving stuff around to try to just get it to lift off. Same thing that Rey did. She's like, oh, they put a compressor on it. It was dumb. And they both said, we bypassed it. And like, just a smile and excitement. You know, her relationship with Han was definitely, it's someone who saw her as an equal. And I don't think she ever had that in her life before, kind of meeting Finn and him.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously looking at Han's trajectory over this film as well, and knowing his relationship with his son, you know, it's kind of an interesting sort of parallel almost to see how he treats Rey and how he interacts with Rey and how they connect versus what you must imagine he was trying to do with Ben when Ben was potentially younger, or and even when he tries to connect with Ben at the end of the movie as well. You know, it's just this really interesting way of looking at it. Like, it's almost like a surrogate daughter kind of position that she's in at points, and it's I find that really heartbreaking as well, because I'm like, Rey has never had a family of sorts, and she very slowly over the course of The Force Awakens is putting together this kind of surrogate family.
Ragtag. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a found family for herself, and that Han has that much respect for her, even though she still feels this pull to go back to Jakku, even after everything is, yeah, it's kind of, really, really, it's a really beautiful relationship for me. I thought it was really successfully done. And I mean, she's smart when it comes to stuff like ships and electronics and that kind of thing. Like, that's what she smuggled through her entire time on Jakku. That's
right.
That's what brings in the money. When, in Before the Awakening, her little story is that she has to repair a ship, a downed ship that's still kind of functional, but then she has to scavenge all of the parts to basically make it functional again. Right. So she has an insane knowledge of like how ships work and how they're put together and how they fly and how to fix them. So you kind of see a lot of that. But a little bit of what you learn about Uncle Plutt as well is that most of the parts that he wants to scavenge and what he will give the most like rations for are ship parts, anything that will work on a ship. So, you know, that she's so in tune with like anything from droids to ships is kind of this instant connection between her and Han, because she understands them the way that he does, and she treats, I guess, the Falcon with the same kind of reverence that Han does at points as well. So even though at one point she calls it garbage, but
which was super funny. I mean, that's the sight gag.
Yeah, but you also got, you forgot the most important part in all that, Danya. Chewie likes her.
Yeah.
Well, and Chewie is the forever co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon.
Well, that's actually a question I was going to ask is, so at the end of the film, Rey and Chewie fly off to go see Luke, right? Is she the captain or is Chewie the captain? She's the co-pilot.
Does it matter?
Well, you know, here's my thing. In my mind, instantly, I thought she was. But then I said, I'm like, wait a minute. She has no claim to this ship. This is Chewie and Han's ship. They had a life debt. They were together forever.
Yeah.
You know, not to say that she can't be the pilot, you know, and Chewie be the captain. I'm just, you know, it's just one of those things to think about.
I mean, I would say that she would just take Han's position, so she'd be the captain.
Yeah, you know? I think I would probably, I believe that.
I'm the opposite way. I thought inheritance-wise, it would make more sense that the ship would go to Chewie than...
Yeah.
Well, not even so much that he's senior, it's that he has so much history with that ship that it makes the most sense that, you know, it would default to him being kind of the owner of the Millennium Falcon now. And that's not necessarily, like Mikey said, that's not necessarily to say that Rey isn't the pilot of the Millennium Falcon and Chewie's the co-pilot. It's just that the Millennium Falcon is kind of his ship. That's kind of the way that I saw it.
I will say, and I think that Chewie will continue to have a prominent role in the Star Wars films, even though I kind of get nervous when they say they're going to do away with the older actors returning. And many people feel like the returning actors like Han, Leia, and Luke were like the weakest part of The Force Awakens. I've seen a lot of criticism about that, like too many throwbacks, too many old actors. Like, I'm the opposite. I want more of the old crew, except to say there is, and I think this was kind of hidden from the most public view, but there's a new Chewbacca actor. Like, Peter Mayhew was in the movie as Chewbacca, but an undisclosed portion of all of Chewbacca in that film was actually played by a Finnish actor called Junas Suotamo. And this guy, there's a great story about him on Movie Web, and he's like just this cool Finnish dude who's like 7 feet tall, and he's really happy to be part of everything. But he did follow Peter Mayhew around on set and basically learned from the best how to portray him. And I really think that this passing of the torch, and it's not stated, but like whenever he lifted heavy things, I'm sure it was this new guy, this young guy. Yeah. I think he's like 27. And so I think that, and it's obviously very easy for them to do that because Chewbacca, you know, it's a costume, it's makeup, he's beast. But I think that's prepping Chewbacca for a larger role just in general.
Yeah, and you know, Peter Mayhew, he's getting up there in age, so I'm not surprised that somebody else was playing him at parts or
no, me neither.
Just learning.
I think it's smart, but ultimately, like, they could have written Chewbacca. They could be planning to just write him out, right? Like, and they could have probably been like, okay, we'll do this with Peter, and then have Chewie like go off. Like, Chewie's very extremely loyal, and I love that about his relationship with Rey. Like, you totally believe that no matter who's the pilot, like, between them, they have this connection that is totally, like, friendly almost immediately.
I agree with that. And the fact that Rey and Chewie are on the Falcon, I hope this just leaves it open for Lando to come in and take back the Millennium Falcon.
I want Lando,
and
too.
We get Billy Dee Williams in episode 8.
I really want Lando back. I really
same.
Come like, on, it's Lando.
I can't believe he wasn't already back. Like, you got his friend, you got 9. I don't know why you don't have Lando.
The film was just so busy. I'm sure he will. And Leia will get more time. And
Mark Hamill's going to be a significant role in the future films,
he
obviously.
Needs to be.
I would hope so.
He needs to be. I don't care if episode 8, like, yeah, sure, Poe is, like, the coolest thing to hit the internet since, I don't know, what was the last thing that hit the internet. But I want episode 8 to be just Rey and Luke.
Well, there was an article or maybe an interview with J.J. Abrams and said the reason they made Luke the way they did was because as soon as Luke was on screen or like as soon as Luke enters the story,
you stop caring
about the other characters.
That makes sense.
And it's because it's like, well, think about it. Like, he comes in, it's like, you're really going to put, you know, Ben Solo or Kylo Ren up against Luke Skywalker, you know, Grand Master of the Jedi. And just like, come on. You know, it's nothing. Like, so, yeah. So I'm excited to see Rey and Chewie going forward into episode 8 and maybe Lando coming in. But what about Rey's force sensitivity? We get introduced to that.
It's interesting.
It's the first time we see it is on Takodana at Maz's castle when she actually has, for some reason, walks down those steps and finds Darth Vader, or I guess Anakin Skywalker, Luke's old lightsaber. And she has that vision.
And some would say that, like, the lightsaber called to her. I'm not sure if that's actually a line in the film, but...
Didn't Maz say that?
It might be. Somebody at some point is like, oh, this called to you. But she has a vision which, to be perfectly honest, if it weren't... And I hate to be critical of, like, the original trilogy, but, like, if it weren't shot so poorly, Luke's vision on Dagobah of, like, his father in or himself in his father's mask, like, all the vision that basically tells him where he comes from and spoils the Darth Vader connection before we learn that who Darth Vader really is, like, it's kind of like one of those basically awakening moments for, I guess, a budding Jedi or a budding Force sensitive.
Would you say the Force awakens at that scene?
I'm connecting it. Because, yeah, I think that when you, like, this is when Rey first realizes that she is part of a larger whole and has, like, some Force juice is, it's the wrong term.
Some Force juice, I like that.
But, like, basically she has this vision. You agree, though, that it's similar to, like, Luke's vision on Dagobah, right? Like,
yeah, it's him seeing the future and, you know, seeing Bespa and seeing his friends, you know, and calling to him, and he has to leave before he's ready. No, I agree with you. It's that total vision, and it's interesting that it was with the lightsaber. You know, there was a bunch of rumors about the lightsaber falling from the sky with a severed hand, all these different things.
Yeah, it is that lightsaber, too,
It's that lightsaber from Bespin, which we're going to get in Battlefront pretty soon. So,
I can't
wait.
I'm going to have to go on a hunt to find that lightsaber hanging around Bespin, like the bottom most level. That'd be great.
But yeah, you know, that vision, there's a lot of different things in that vision. You know, we had two different Obi-Wan voices. We have Yoda's voice in there.
So cool.
We see, you know, the Knights of Ren, which was from the trailer. Did anyone read the novelization? I'm looking at you, Danya, of The Force Awakens.
Yes.
Okay.
I have mixed feelings about the novelization, though. So.
Okay. About whether or not it's canon, or
yeah, mostly because it was from an earlier production script, so there's a lot of discrepancies between what we actually saw on screen and what they wrote down. So I kind of feel really conflicted about how much of it I can really trust
well,
as actually being part of the canon.
Well, here's what I'll argue with this. So I know you're talking about specifically in the Force vision, right? Or
no,
there's
I'm
a lot
like,
more elsewhere, but I'm thinking I'm yeah. just right now about the vision.
Yeah.
There's a whole scene in the, and it doesn't go into it as much, but in the book, Rey is actually running down a hallway. Now we see the hallway in the film for a split second. It's the Cloud City hallway that Luke and Vader fight in.
What?
And I think, and you know, this is me speculating, I'm pretty sure at one point in time that we were actually supposed to see her watching Luke and Vader fight. There's a reason Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker, Bespin Luke Skywalker, are actually part of the Force Awakens toy line also. So, you know, so she sees this, which is father revealing to son who he is. I'm not saying that Luke is her dad, but I'm just saying, like, we see this along with her seeing, you know, the Knights of Ren slaughtering everything. You know, Obi-Wan saying, you've taken your first steps on a journey. You know, like, all these different things. Like, it scares her. You know, like, she backs away from it. She doesn't want to take this journey. So it's definitely a pivotal moment in the film that you just get kind of – for me, I'll be honest, I just got super giddy. I sat up in my seat even more and was like, oh, my gosh, you know. But, you know, that vision –
it seems like a big revelation was about to come out.
Yeah, and then she said, no, I'm never touching that again, and runs away. Which I was like, what? I want to know more. Like, you
good
just
for her.
I want to know
like,
more.
Choosing something in the movie to get just totally squigged out about. And like, no, cool. I'm not going back.
As Maz said, that is a good question for another time. And we'll hear about it. I'm sure she's going to have a scene in episode 8 where she explains all that.
I think we found our first segment of a fun segment of the show where Andrew Sims does Maz Kanata impressions.
I might just have to have him record an entire episode like that at some point in time.
And we have special guest on Resistance Radio, Maz Kanata. Hello, Maz. Hello.
I can only do that line. That's as good as it's going to get.
All right. Well, all right. So beyond her kind of, you know, being Force sensitive, and we've seen the vision in Takodana. What about when she's on Starkiller Base and being interrogated by Mr. Kylo Ren?
Can I just say, okay, it was very bold of them to introduce this dark force power of Kylo's to basically, like, it's like force mind reading. It's like torture type style. Like, it's kind of cool because this is not something that is overtly in the original or prequel trilogy, like this ability. So I thought it was cool that there was a new ability that they gave the baddie to have. But what I love most about it and Rey's resistance of it is that whenever stuff gets tough, Rey has almost this innate understanding that she just needs to close her eyes and find some peace. You know, like she, on multiple occasions, it's when she's resisting the mind torture and also when they're locked in the lightsaber battle at the end in the snow, she just has this moment where she closes her eyes, she centers herself, she's like, finds her spiritual zen, and immediately becomes like 10 times more powerful than Kylo. And is successful at pushing him out of her mind and is successful at whooping his ass with her saber. Like, it's just, that's what I love most about it, because ultimately it's kind of almost the first, for me, canon acknowledgement that the light side is more powerful. But I mean, Kylo is still a student himself, so maybe that's neither here nor there. But I love that she has this sort of natural inclination to just close her eyes and find peace, and that that is what gives her her power.
And not only that, I think it speaks a lot for how she must have been brought up, that she's very good at, I guess, analyzing a situation, figuring out how someone has managed to do that, and manipulating it, being able to use it in order to survive. Because that's what she is, more than anything else, is she's a survivor. You think about how harsh life on Jakku must have been, and how almost cutthroat it must have been to be able to get those rations, because you would have to get to all of those, or to be able to scavenge everything, you'd have to get that first, and you'd have to get something better than everyone else. So for her to be able to kind of pinpoint exactly what it was that Kylo Ren was doing and turn that on him as quickly as she did kind of almost speaks to this innate ability that she has to survive. It's like survival instincts. And
I like that a lot.
Yeah. I just really love how she could pick that up. And you see it as well with how she manages to manipulate the stormtrooper guarding her cell as well.
You mean Daniel Craig?
Daniel Craig, whose stormtrooper designation was actually JB-007. So
just best ever.
Yeah, coolest little tidbit from that film. But you know, for her to be able to see what someone else had managed to do and kind of be like, okay, I need to figure out how they did it, and quick, because it's the only way I'm going to be able to survive here. And yeah, I just really, really love that aspect of her character. It's like doing what's necessary, figuring it out. And I really, really loved it a lot.
Would you say that you think it's just survival instinct, or do you think when Kylo Ren was pushing into her mind, unlock some hidden memories? You know, maybe she had training beforehand, because she was right away, right after that, able to manipulate JB-007, you know, with mind control, which Obi-Wan said was only worked on the weak mind, and so she had to have some type of concentration for it.
I mean, it's plausible. I mean, she's got to have some very, very strong force ability. Like, whether that's come from her awakening on Takadana, or whether that came from maybe Kylo Ren pushing into her mind and her pushing back and that unlocking something, at some point it's awakened something in her. But I guess there's a difference between, I think, her understanding that there's something there and understanding how to use it. So she might be able to feel that there's something different with her, that she's got some kind of ability there, but without knowing how, the practical application of it, without having seen someone else use it previously, she has no understanding of how to do that herself. So I guess the way that I kind of saw it was she can probably feel that in herself, but without knowing how to kind of channel it, there was no way that she would be able to use it to her advantage. Once she sees Kylo Ren using it and being able to manipulate things and seeing how he managed his force power, then she could kind of mimic it and use it to her advantage. And
that said, I don't think she's tapping into the same exact power, because he's obviously a dark force user and she's a light force user.
Yeah, well, it's like based on similar principles, like the baseline of the force. However you utilize that is down to your strength of character and how easily you're swayed one way or the other. But I don't know, I kind of like that she figured it out as she went along. And I guess, obviously, as we get into episode 8, we'll probably learn more about how powerful she is with the Force. But, yeah.
All right. What about Rey and Kylo Ren's fight at the very end of the film? We kind of saw, well, actually, if you remember it, at the beginning, Kylo Ren just threw her like a rag doll. Like, it was just like, no problem. And he'd already been shot once. And then he fought
with
Finn.
With a bowcaster.
Yeah, with a bowcaster, which like blew stormtroopers across the way, like 10
meters.
It's
the best gun in Battlefront, by the way.
You got to charge it up, though. You can't just
Yeah, I know. It sucks.
But yeah, it's exactly that. You know, so, you know, Kylo Ren has obviously control over everything at the beginning. But as the fight goes on, he's hurt. You know, one of the biggest criticisms I've seen is people say, well, how did she know how to do all that? She had shown proficiency to fight with a bow, you know, a stick already. You know, a lightsaber's not that much different. And, you know, she's been, you know, like you said, she's a survivor. You know, survival instincts on Jakku growing up like that. She's got to be pretty scrappy. But by her coming back and seeing Finn hurt and then pulling the lightsaber to her instead of going to Kylo Ren, you just kind of like, oh, man. It reminded me of kind of the scene when Yoda and Count Dooku fight in Attack of the Clones. Like, Yoda just comes out, just like total badass, and he's like, doesn't even grab his lightsaber, uses the Force to grab it, and then go at it. It's just like, it's the same thing. It's like, you think it's going to Kylo Ren, and then all of a sudden it's like, no. And then she turns it on. You're just like, all right, this is going to be the awesome fight that we were expecting, because the beginning was not what it was. And then, of course, like you said, closed her eyes, found her centering at the very end, just to kind of have a lot of strength from it. What are you guys' thoughts on the fight overall?
Well, the end was definitely the best part, where she does use the Force, as you were saying, to grab the saber, and it goes directly to her. Like, that was one of those, like, oh, hell yeah, type moments that you just wanted to stand up and applaud.
I think what was really interesting about the fight with the way that it was staged is that she's very much aware in this situation that Kylo Ren is more powerful, but she's also aware that at certain points that he's injured. So for the first sort of part of the fight, she's actually retreating. She's kind of drawing it out in its own way, kind of almost tiring him out. And she retreats further and further and further away, and the way that she's fighting is very clever, because in terms of her skill, she's not as trained in the usage of a lightsaber as he is, so she's kind of using her surroundings and using what she knows in terms of her survival instincts in order to get the upper hand eventually. But if you go back and watch it, a lot of the time she's defending rather than attacking. So I thought that was a really interesting way to stage the battle. But, you know, she turns the tide towards the end of it as well, which was really, really cool. I actually really like this battle a lot, especially when she kind of got the upper hand and and Kylo Ren gets knocked on his ass, because... Boy needs a smackdown.
There is a moment, I am recalling, like, there is a moment where she could have killed him, right? But she very clearly chooses not to, and then as soon as the moment is over, the earth itself shakes and separates them.
Yeah, and the whole ground splits apart and everything, and yeah. There's a moment where she has a choice. I will say, in the novelization, of that fight scene, Snoke is actually telling her to kill him. So, you know, he's there already knowing who it is.
I like that. No, but okay, that's interesting. Yeah. It's basically like it parallels Luke and the Emperor, right?
Yeah.
The Emperor saying, run your father down.
It's exactly like that scene from Return of the Jedi where it's like, you know, strike him down, you know, do it. And then he says, no, I won't do that. I'm a Jedi like my father. You
She's
know,
she too makes, pure.
She makes that same decision that Luke made at the end of Return of the Jedi.
I mean, there's a lot of criticism out there right now from a few different areas of the internet where they are talking about Rey being too much of a Mary Sue. So for anyone who isn't familiar with the term, a Mary Sue is pretty much a term coined for a character that's essentially perfect. So they have just the right abilities at the right times, that they're essential to the storyline. They're flawless, pretty much. And a lot of people have kind of said that Rey is too conveniently good in the story. Now, I have some very strong opinions about this, as people could probably... if you've listened to any of my other podcasts, you will know that I have very strong opinions about stuff like this. But what about any of you? Have you seen any of these discussions going around? What do you think, just in general, of Rey as a character on the merit of what we learned about her during The Force Awakens?
Yeah, it's a tough thing to answer. I don't want to say she's a Mary Sue because I don't want people to hate on me. No, I'm kidding. When she does need to use the Force, it is there for her. But I think there's a difference between being a Mary Sue and then being a character. Star Wars is trying to create a character here who is genuinely special and has these powers that she discovers. And yes, it's when she needs them and she uses them to get out of tough situations. But I don't know. I think it's okay that she's able to use the Force when she needs it at this early stage in her Force life. So, yeah, I don't think the Mary Sue thing needs to be a debate right now. Maybe let's see what happens in episode 8. I imagine since she's going to be learning more about herself, probably through Luke, she'll see some flaws in herself. Some more.
I'll agree with you 100% on that. I don't think she's a Mary Sue in the sense that Star Wars films have always had something conveniently happen, you know, at the right moment in time. You know, to pick on one of my favorite characters, again, I was young when Phantom Menace came out, Jar Jar Binks. I love to hate him. I love him in so many different ways, but I hate him at the same time. All right. So just bear with me for a second.
Wait, you like Jar Jar too? I like Jar Jar.
I love Jar Jar. He's great. Now, I will say he's annoying. And even today, it's like, I'm like, all right, you know, I get it. But at the same time, like, I really did like him as a kid. And I don't know if any of you guys ever saw the film Fanboys. Seth Rogen getting the Jar Jar Binks tattoo with his arms crossed was just like the coolest thing ever.
Wait a minute. Have you read, not to interject, but have you read that fan theory about Jar Jar that he's secretly like the most powerful Jedi ever?
Yes.
Okay.
Which we may or may not discuss at some later point.
Okay, on Jar Jar episode that no one Jar Jar will ever listen to.
You never know, right? I mean, put that in the show notes. But here's the thing.
You're going to trick people into this.
listen to about Misa Jar Jar Binks, you know? But it's one of those things where even in Phantom Menace, Jar Jar is so lucky at the final battle. Like, he has a battle droid stuck to his foot, and he's kicking it around, taking out other battle droids, and then he trips over, and it shoots over him to kill another droid. It's like, it was just all pure luck, and those things happened at just the right time, and it's okay. You know, that's part of the story. That's part of the, you know, it's not meant to be real life. So the fact that Rey's Force powers come out when she needs them, it's okay. You know, it's like you do extraordinary things. You hear about people lifting buses and stuff when kids are trapped. You know, it's like those types of things.
Yeah. You know, you went for the really difficult sell there. And I have to say, Mikey, I really admire you because I thought a much easier comparison would have just been the trench run on the first Death Star, right? Luke, who's untrained, makes the shot without his targeting skill.
That's true. Now, he does have the guidance of Ben Kenobi there. He's like, you know, trust in yourself. Yeah. And the difference is he's kind of trusting in herself. Like, she actually does the same thing, you know, she just differently. You know, she trusts in herself to do what she needs to.
Kind of centers herself, you know, just like Luke does. So I do think that a new Force user, or relatively new user to the Force, relatively new to the fact that there is a Force that binds us and penetrates us and surrounds us, can accomplish great deeds. So regarding this, I wouldn't justify the claim of Mary Sue to, like, even with a response. I haven't read those articles. I don't read those articles. But I do genuinely feel that as a hero, her purity of heart, which is almost impossible to defeat in this film, is very special indeed. And I think that I love her as a hero because she is so pure and almost, in a way, flawless. I love that about her because it interests me in learning who she really is, or how she got this way. Or I just think it's captivating as to find a character who grew up in this crapshoot, you know, where Phasma is at the end of the, she grew up on this desert planet, you know, and really didn't have anything, but she somehow kept a positive attitude. She had less than Luke had, and Luke was the hero of the original trilogy. And I just think that's extremely special, and it doesn't turn me away from her. I think it interests me more.
Yeah, same. And I think even then, it offers this almost vulnerability to her as well, that sort of abandonment on Jakku and everything like that. Like, she's doing what she needs to, but at points she's afraid and she's worried, and all she wants is a family. All she wants is kind of acceptance. So she's both a strong and a fragile character at the same time. It's a really interesting contradiction within herself, but also very human. It was great. It's one of the things that I loved most about her. But again, you know, we saw it with Anakin, we saw it with Luke, that their innate ability to just pick up stuff with the Force immediately, as and when it was needed. You know, it's been a theme through every single kind of trilogy of films. So that she was able to do so as Luke did and as Anakin did before her was nothing new. We've seen it before. With a lot of these articles, I don't understand. Well, I say I don't understand why it's a problem now. Fully understand why it's a problem now. But, you know, a lot of the other arguments that they've made is stuff like, oh, she too conveniently can pilot, and why can she speak so many languages? Well, you know, there's a very simple explanation for those as well, which is that she was left on Jakku, which is almost this hub for scavengers, and you would also assume some kind of untoward people. So she would probably, out of necessity, have to be able to communicate with loads of different people, not just people who speak basic, but also people who speak other languages from across the Star Wars universe. And so, you know, I would say that maybe she's not as completely proficient in all of those languages as we may assume, but she knows enough to get by. And the same with ships. It was a necessity, being able to understand how to pilot and fix and remove parts is a necessity to her character. So I think that as people, in a lot of these arguments, it's willfully ignoring things within the canon that have been offered up to explain why she can do this sort of thing, and instead of reading between the lines, they're just kind of saying, no, it's too unrealistic, which I don't think it is, but there are arguments out there of people who are saying that she's too conveniently good at too many things.
You know, you said something really interesting, that Anakin was able to do it, Luke was able to do it, and she's able to do it. Do you think she's a Skywalker? Is she a Kenobi? Is she a Solo? This is the last thing we're going to talk about before we're done, guys. So what do you guys think?
Because they're setting it up to be that way, of course. That was the big cliffhanger.
Or is she someone completely different, you know?
That could be too, different. But Luke appears to see something in her, as we saw at the very end of the movie. So, I mean, that is the big question. I think they left it on a really exciting cliffhanger, which is one of the reasons why it stung a little bit to hear that we have to wait an extra few months to see the movie. But yeah, I think there's definitely a special connection between them. Worst case scenario, Luke is probably going to take her under his wing and teach her the ways, if she's not a Skywalker, I mean. But yeah, I have my money on. So then again, it just seems like too obvious. So
I think it's too easy. I don't necessarily think it's unlikely. I just think it's too easy. I want her to actually be a stranger. I love the idea of her being a Kenobi. I read something that was like all too recently. I was like reading most common theories about Rey, and then somebody said she's a Kenobi. It was the first time I had heard of that. I'm like, oh, I want everything to know about that. But no, I want her to be just a stranger, because Luke, I know he had the familial tie with the whole baddie, but I want Rey to be a nobody, completely nobody.
What about you, Danya?
I'm slowly leaning in the same direction, that I would like her to kind of come from outside of that main family of characters. So the Solos, the Kenobis, the Skywalkers. I think that would make it a lot more interesting. It would also make that theme of passing the torch a lot stronger as well, which, you know, is something that they are very obviously setting up to hand things over to this new generation of characters. But keeping such strong ties sometimes to the main characters from the previous trilogy in respect to blood may not be the best thing to do necessarily. It's very obvious that they're trying to make us think that she's a Skywalker. They have a lot of cues throughout the movie that would suggest as much. For example, the similarities between Rey's theme in the music and the Binary Sunset, which is the piece of music that you see most often when Luke is on screen through the original trilogy. So it's kind of... It's trying to push you in that direction, but I'm really conflicted about it, because there's so many good theories out there. I even saw one, for example, that suggested that perhaps she could be the daughter of, name of the actress in Rogue One, is it Felicity Jones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Felicity Jones.
So could be Felicity Jones's character's daughter. So I've seen stuff like theories like that, and that's how they'd connect Rogue One in.
I love that.
That's interesting.
Immediately. Like, I just... Making her a Skywalker makes the films, to me, too claustrophobic.
Like, you know,
the universe. Because to be perfectly honest, this is supposed to be one of the, like, the very largest universe ever committed to fiction, I think. You know? Just think about how wide this galaxy is.
And multiple planets. No, I get that.
Literally, the only important people are the Skywalkers. Come on.
But here's the thing.
That's true.
I'm going to be completely opposite from all of you. I think she's a Skywalker. I think she's a Skywalker. And here's my argument for it. Like, yes, I think it would be really nice if she wasn't. I'd be okay if she wasn't. I'd be okay if she was a Kenobi or Solo or whatever every fan theory is. I think she's a Skywalker because the prequel trilogy was about Anakin Skywalker and his fall to, you know, Darth Vader. Right, the original trilogy is about Luke Skywalker's journey and him redeeming his father. To kind of mirror those and be cyclical of everything, she has to be a Skywalker, and she has to try to redeem Ben Solo, you know, her cousin.
Let me finish.
She has to try to redeem it, but I think she won't be able to. I think she'll have to kill him. I think it has to be. I think she needs to be a Skywalker. Like, I want her to be a Skywalker. I know it's claustrophobic and everything, and like it's in small universe. I will say I was super excited and sad at the same time when Amazon posted a last name for Finn as Calrissian. I was like, all right, but then I'm like, oh, the only black guys in Star Wars are Calrissians. Yeah, go get it. And then obviously that was, you know, just someone made a mistake on Amazon's website. But like, seriously, like,
hopefully.
Yeah,
yeah, I hope so.
Hey, you know, I really want Billy Dee to come back. So, you know,
I do want him back, but not because he's somebody's father. I mean, come on.
I just want the cape to be on screen again, because come on. Come on. That he looks good. Anyway.
We just need to have that on a display case in the new Star Wars land, and we can go visit it.
Yeah. No, but I feel like Rey should be a Skywalker. Like, I get the story and everything, and I'll be okay with however they do it. But I think that will evolve Luke's character more for this, because what kind of father abandons, you know, someone, a family member,
it's
a child
too much.
On it?
It's way too much. You don't need – Luke already has a lot of answering to do. Like, Luke is responsible. I'm going to pin this on him right now. He's responsible for the mess that exists today. He's responsible for the First Order existing. He's responsible for everyone who was killed by Starkiller Base because he left. He gave up and left. It's just that simple. Everything that happened in The Force Awakens is his fault. And Chewie, when he sees Luke in Episode 8, the first 5 minutes should be Luke running from Chewie, because Chewie's going to rip his arms off, because Han's death also on Luke, okay? I'm not, like, Luke doesn't, it does, he doesn't need to be somebody's dad who abandoned them, and that's why we hate him. We already have a lot against Luke, I think. I think it's in the, we have reason to not be very happy with him. So I think that instead, I want to see Luke train her. Like, Andrew, you mentioned the look that he gives her at the end of Force Awakens. And I think what I read into that was not that he recognizes her. I think what the look means is, because she's very clearly holding his own lightsaber back out to him. But I think symbolically, almost like what Donnie was saying about, like, the old war films too, like, she's just asking him to return to battle. And he's like, oh, you've put this upon me. I'm being asked to join the war that I stayed away from for so long. Like, I think it's just a look of kind of exhaustion and like, yeah, I kind of guessed this would happen eventually. Like, I need to go get back into the fight. That's what I think the look is. I don't think it has anything to do with a familial relation or, oh, daughter, hey.
All right, back. All right. We'll see. We'll see. You hear me say it here. I think she's a Skywalker.
But does she need to be a Skywalker to still be related to Luke? Because here's the thing. I was just thinking about this as we were talking. There's no getting past the fact that Daisy Ridley actually has, features-wise and everything, she's got a striking resemblance to both Carrie Fisher when she was younger and also Natalie Portman. But that doesn't necessarily mean that she has to be descendant directly from Luke. Could she not be part of, like, the Amidala family somewhere along that line? Like, a distant relation?
It's almost like, why bother? Like, if she's distantly related, if she's not a direct descendant, why even make her part of anybody's? Because, like, the connection is so thin for the audience then. Like, oh, you're the
great... I don't know. Padme is as strong. I mean, Luke has as much of Padme in him as he does of Anakin.
Except,
you know,
but you got to remember, the Amidala family, at least to our knowledge, we don't know if there's any force in them and everything. And obviously, it's inherent in her, and she's able to use it. You know, when she centers herself.
In everybody, supposedly, but some people are more sensitive.
I get that. So
Kathleen Kennedy. This is the reported by the Hollywood Reporter on October 1st. I wanted to find this quote. Kathleen Kennedy said that the core films focus on the Skywalker family saga. That is what she said 2 months before Force Awakens came out. That the core film, the core Star Wars films, meaning the future ones too, focus on the Skywalker family saga. That seems to spoil immediately that Rey would be a Skywalker, but I would argue that you can still do that with Kylo Ren.
Exactly. I was just going to make that.
You
argument.
Can still. All right. And I want them.
But he's a solo. He's a solo.
He's as much Leia.
He's a solo. Yeah. But Leia. But he's a solo.
If Leia hadn't been adopted, she would be a Skywalker as a surname. And she's as much a Skywalker as. Like, Kylo, I wish that closes the loop, because that's already. You've already got. It was painful to watch on screen all the times they mentioned that Han Solo was Kylo's father. But, you know, I think that you could really wrap this up that way. You could really have the next generation of Skywalkers be through Ben Solo. Frankly, the connection to Darth Vader, who was Anakin Skywalker, has already been illustrated, and you don't need to, like, force another Skywalker down our throats.
All right.
I want Rey to be from nowhere, because I think she ultimately is it would be more fitting for everybody, so that just anybody watching the film can be like, oh, that's me, you know. And I really want that for her. I want a hero that is necessary, is like pure of heart, again, not through blood. She just chooses to be. She's just like this good character who doesn't owe anybody anything because she's not related to anybody. But okay. I think it's probably heading in the way that, yes, she's probably related to somebody, and Kylo and her are probably cousins, and that's just the way it is.
I'm just saying, you know, they've even said they're going to pull from the expanded universe. There was a fight when Han Solo and Leia's son went to the dark side, and their daughter had to fight him. You know, I'm just saying that may or may not be kind of what we're seeing here. But who knows? All right, guys. Anything else for the first episode of Resistance Radio?
Episode 8 is filming, actually.
Yes.
That was revealed, I think, by the CEO, Bob Iger of Disney.
During the conference call.
And people have been tweeting, the cast members have been tweeting that they're getting back into it, so...
Yeah, Daisy Ridley doing her little Fitness Friday.
You don't understand. I was still living in Wales when The Force Awakens was filming, so I was a good 3-odd hours away from where they were filming. Right now, I live about maybe 40 minutes at a push away from Leavesden Studios. It is so easy to get there. It's like just a straight
shot. So why aren't you there right now?
I don't want to be there. It's like 1 a.m. I can totally like camp out and be like, hey.
From set. There we go.
Yeah. Star Wars set. I'm here. What's going on? Can I be in the film? Yay. No, I live so close and it's so tempting to just like take off and go and see if I can see anything. But
I love that.
Yeah. I live too close to where they're filming. It's terrible. It's awesome, but it's also terrible.
Can you feel the energy just coming off the set over the mountains?
Oh yeah, that's exactly how it feels. No, it's a horrible temptation to just get in my car and drive down there.
Alrighty. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to episode 1 of Resistance Radio, our Star Wars podcast. I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Eric.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right.
What's a good sign off?
I don't know.
May the force be with you.
Come on.
Oh, come on. May the force be with you. All right.
Why did we even stumble on that?
All right.
We're not real Star Wars fans, everybody.
Apparently not.
Gosh, that was hard. The whole episode was scripted ahead by real Star Wars fans.